Susie Breeding has been in the hospital for the last several days because of preeclampsia at 27 weeks gestation. She presented to her doctor's office because of a nagging headache that didn't resolve with a couple of Tylenols. In the office, her blood pressure was 150 over 95, and when it was rechecked later in the visit, it was 140 over 90. She had 1+ proteinuria with an office dipstick. The rest of her exam was normal, with no evidence of edema or hyperreflexia. She was sent to the hospital for further evaluation. When she arrived, her blood pressure was 144 over 88. This is significantly increased over her early pregnancy blood pressures of 120 to 130 over 70 to 80. This is her second pregnancy. Her first pregnancy was complicated by severe preeclampsia at 36 weeks, requiring early delivery by induction of labor. The current pregnancy has been uncomplicated up until now. In labor and delivery, we drew some lab tests and began continuous electronic fetal monitoring. The fetus had a normal reactive pattern with a normal baseline of 140 beats per minute and occasional spontaneous broad-based fetal cardiac accelerations without any decelerations. She had a rare contraction during the monitoring. Her cervix was long, thick, and closed. The lab results showed a hemoglobin of 12.9, a white blood count of 10.1, platelets of 220,000. Her BUN was 16, her creatinine was 1.0, and uric acid 7.1. Alkaline phosphatase was 180, SGOT was 12, and SGPT was 24. Her urinalysis was normal except for 1+ proteinuria. She was started on a course of betamethasone and transferred to the antepartum unit for further observation and management. There's no question that she has preeclampsia. She has the two essential clinical findings, persistent hypertension greater than 140 over 90, and proteinuria. Her hemoglobin is slightly elevated for pregnancy, representing the hemoconcentration that usually accompanies preeclampsia. Similarly, her BUN at 16 is slightly elevated for pregnancy. An elevation of uric acid is a common feature of preeclampsia, although it's nonspecific. Her uric acid was slightly elevated at 7.1. This is thought to reflect a combination of increased breakdown of cell nuclei due to local tissue ischemia and reduced renal clearance. She had a normal platelet count, SGOT, SGPT, and creatinine, indicating that her preeclampsia is mild and not severe. Preeclampsia is a continuum that starts relatively early in pregnancy with defective placentation. In preeclampsia, the cytotrophoblast, which is supposed to infiltrate the maternal spiral arteries all the way into the myometrium, only reaches the decidual portion of the spiral arteries. Because of this, the placenta fails to develop all of the normal large, low-resistance, high-flow blood vessels, and instead the vessels remain relatively narrow. The consequence is some degree of hypoperfusion of the placenta, which may ultimately lead to at least some focal placental ischemia. The ischemic placenta releases a number of substances into the maternal circulation, among them factors which act on maternal microvasculature to cause vasospasm and endothelial damage. All of the clinical symptoms of preeclampsia can be traced to this vasospasm and endothelial damage. Prior medical problems like preexisting hypertension, genetic factors, and immunologic factors may all be modifying factors, either to promote or to protect against these injuries. The take-home message is this. Preeclampsia, once diagnosed, has been present in a preclinical form for many months. Second, the fetus may already be in some jeopardy because of diminished placental function. Third, preeclampsia is a progressive disease that is only resolved by delivery. So from a purely disease management standpoint, the best clinical approach to resolve preeclampsia would be immediate delivery. And sometimes, that's exactly what we do. The problem is that a fetus at 27 weeks, if delivered immediately, may suffer significantly from prematurity, outweighing any benefit it might have gained from avoiding further exposure to diminished placental function. So for patients who are both preeclamptic and premature, we often modify our basic strategy of immediate delivery. In this case, we decided to administer a course of antenatal steroids, betamethasone, to stimulate the fetal organs to mature faster than they otherwise would. This means that if we should have to deliver the baby early, it will be as well prepared for extrauterine life as we can make it. Then we place the patient on strict bed rest in the hospital for further monitoring. We're watching her blood pressures for evidence of worsening. In her case, the blood pressures improved, and this is common. Eventually, they will probably worsen again, because preeclampsia tends to worsen over time. But in the short run, they tend to improve on bed rest. We also repeated her laboratory tests looking for worsening trends. In her case, her labs were stable or improved, as did her weight. We initially started monitoring the fetus every day, looking for a consistently reassuring fetal heart rate pattern, and that's what we found. We also had an ultrasound scan done, specifically looking for fetal weight and the amniotic fluid index. With increasing placental malfunction, there's often a concurrent pattern of fetal growth restriction and reduced amniotic fluid volume. In this case, the fetal growth parameters were normal, and she had plenty of amniotic fluid with an AFI of 15. So our overall strategy with her is to try to prolong her pregnancy until the fetus is significantly more mature or her preeclampsia significantly worsens. Either of those could push us towards early delivery, but for the moment, she seems to be doing fine.